You are listening to Know You're Crazy. My name is Susan Dene. We all have crazy. What separates us is how we choose to deal with it. I'm going to be delivering engaging and actionable tools to own your crazy, treat your crazy, and turn it into your own superpower. I hope that you walk away from this show feeling the power and strength within you. And never forget to enjoy your journey because you are worth it. Hey everyone, this is Susan Dene. Welcome to the Know Your Crazy talk show where you are listening to emotional recovery in the raw. I like to talk about four key areas of life, one of those being relationships. Today's show is all about sobriety and love. So if you are someone who, after getting sober, realized you have no clue what it takes to have a functional and loving relationship, then this show is for you. The ability to learn a new way of being within a relationship, whether it's with your partner or it's in a relationship with your kids, who you are in sobriety when it comes to relationships can be very tricky for a lot of us. Early sobriety will impact you differently than long-term sobriety. There's several different scenarios. I like to think that we go through stages in our recovery where as we become more evolved in our recovery, the quality of our relationships will also evolve, hopefully, as long as we are keeping an eye on our own behavior. Us alcoholics and addicts in sobriety and before we get clean and sober are very self-centered and selfishness to the core. That's part of our dilemma. We have a hard time seeing past ourselves and the impact that we're having in other people's lives. When I'm working with women in recovery and couples in recovery, this area can be a very sensitive area for us. We tend to feel a threat of loss. Potentially, we're not going to get what we want. It comes down to simple fear. We're either going to lose something we have or not get something that we want. I came to this topic because my husband and I, my second husband, by the way, married him in sobriety, have an excellent communication. We've been together for nearly 14 years. It wasn't always that way. Although it wasn't highly dysfunctional by any means, we have both evolved in our sobriety the longer that we've been together. In addition to working with women for nearly 20 years, I've been able to not only witness, but also help and counsel different types of relationships and how we get over ourselves and learn to be authentic and loving within our relationships. And then how do we communicate? You know, love is a decision. It is not a feeling. As much as we would love to get all goo-goo over the lovey-dovey feeling, at the end of the day, to be truly compassionate and considerate of someone else's needs and emotions, it is a decision to be made. So, having said all of that, I'm just going to tell a little bit about my story, some of the things that have worked well for me. I will also be sharing some methods and some ideas that have worked with the women that I've worked with and couples that I've coached. And so hopefully some of that will be of service to you today. As I was reflecting to start this show and decide on what I was going to talk about, I was reminded of my early sober years when I very first got sober. With sobriety comes an amount of humility if you are lucky. If you're not lucky, you might end up drinking and using again. But if you're lucky enough to get a round of humility, which means you have pretty much been leveled to the point of openness to any new ideas because you come to the realization that your ideas are no longer working for you. If you happen to be in a relationship when you hit essentially a rock bottom and you know that it's time to get sober, when that fog lifts and you now get to take a new look at that relationship, you might be left to find dysfunction to a high extreme. The person that you're married to, you may even doubt if you want to be married to them. If you're a recovered alcoholic or recovered drug addict in early sobriety, there's a high likelihood that the person you married while you were suffering in your disease is either also an alcoholic or a drug addict, or they are not, but they have been impacted by the disease of addiction through you, or they've also been raised by addiction or alcoholism on some level, which made them tolerable of you and your disease. Like, there's all kinds of different things that can go into what makes a couple stay together in addiction. And then staying together after recovery begins can be a very challenging and troublesome time for couples. My story, my original story, married to my first husband, I got sober because he hit rock bottom first. And when he came home from treatment, that first day home was my first day of sobriety. We were in early sobriety together. I remember going to a couples group back then. The treatment center had recommended that we go to a couples group for sober couples. And I, one of the things, I barely recall much of it because this was over 20 years ago. But what I do recall was they said that the odds of us staying together were like practically zero. I mean, you had like 1% chance because both partners were getting sober. Any of you who have gotten sober or any of you who have been with somebody who has gotten sober understands the emotional and mental recovery is intense and it's not pretty. Because when you take the drug or the alcohol away from the addict or the alcoholic, we are left with raw emotions that we are not used to dealing with. You put us in a relationship when we're getting sober, and now we are threatened by their actions and their attitudes. We don't know if we're the codependent or if we're the one that they're being codependent with. There are so many things to iron out. When I got sober and we began our journey, I was a little bit slow to the game as far as taking really good action steps in sobriety. I'd go to like one recovery meeting a week. He was working with somebody in sobriety, a sponsor at the time. He was definitely more involved in his recovery in the early days than I was. And here we were, a relatively young couple with small children, early sobriety. Early sobriety can mean a lot of financial wreckage. It can mean a lot of financial ruin. And how do you function in that realm? I was telling a story about that not too long ago. And I was saying that for whatever reason, when my first husband got sober and then I shortly thereafter, I never experienced any anger. I think it's important that when we're in a marriage with somebody or we're in a partnership with somebody, especially in early sobriety, that we remind ourselves, if we stripped away all the problems, the original plan of getting with somebody or marrying them was to be happy. And hopefully, you might have been married under some duress if you guys were using it at the time. However, hopefully, they're your friend. And when a friend is sick, do you get mad at them? I share that message because if any of you are suffering right now with a partner or somebody who's in early sobriety, or you're wondering if they're going to get sober, you are literally dealing with a sick person. I share that because that's what worked for me, was I just made a decision back then not to be mad at my friend for suffering a particular path that obviously seemed that he had no choice in. So that was one of the very first baby steps I took in perception change. Another thing that once I made a decision to continue to do work on me, and I think that's important when we get into love and sobriety, whether you're the sober partner or you're both getting sober or you're the one who's been tolerating the behavior of the alcoholic or addict and now they're sober and that in itself is going to affect you, have both partners made a decision to come together and to do emotional work. It doesn't necessarily mean that both partners need to go to therapy together at the same time or both partners needs to be a combined thing. Sometimes it's each person taking responsibility for their own part in the relationship to learn and to grow in sobriety, even if one of them is not the alcoholic or the drug addict. So both people take a willingness to get better emotionally and mentally, because at the end of the day, if you're an alcoholic and a drug addict who gets sober and you wake up in a relationship, you're probably waking up to a lot of shame, a lot of guilt, a lot of regret. And now you get to look at those things. And yes, you get to look at those things. But there are resources and things that you can do to make yourself better. If you are the other one in the relationship and you've been tolerating a sick alcoholic for a while and you've got your own role to play in that, if you don't want to continue to show up in the same way, because showing up in the same way with a sober alcoholic is going to be different and it likely won't work, you too have work cut out for you. Why did you tolerate the behavior for so long? Where did you think you needed support, but you didn't know how to ask for support? Like, there's tools for both partners in the relationship and resources that they can go and start really just take responsibility for your part in the relationship. That is key to any successful love in sobriety, is each party taking responsibility for their role in the relationship. If that relationship has static for whatever reason, I don't care if you got 5 years sober and your partner's got 10 years sober, or you got 20 years sober and your partner's got 15 years sober. If you have come to a crossroads where that relationship is not working, both parties have a play in that. It is not one person's fault and not the other. It doesn't work like that. There is a breakdown in relationship. There is a breakdown in communication that both individuals are responsible for to take a best step forward. You know, if you are a grown-ass adult and you're still taking inventory in an argumentative manner with your partner, then you obviously have missed somewhere that part about taking responsibility for your own role in the relationship. And yes, I'm getting a little bit forward here, because I think that happiness does not land in our lap in love. Happiness does just not roll out to us. Happiness is earned in a relationship. It is getting to the bottom of humility, emotional pain, and mental anguish, and asking yourself, what am I willing to do in my relationship and for my relationship, to advocate for my relationship so that I can experience love and satisfaction in the future? And because so many people can end up whining about the relationship and it's not working, but yet they're not doing anything. They're not going to therapy, or they're not looking for extra help. They've made up their mind that they're right. And I will honestly say that sometimes in sobriety, when we are sober for a long time and we think we know some stuff, sometimes that's more dangerous than when we're a newcomer in sobriety and we're vulnerable and we're in that humility stage where we're actually willing to admit that we don't know everything. That stage is sometimes healthier for a relationship than it is the stage when the person with long-time sobriety thinks they know some stuff. Because sometimes that's when the self-will and the self-centeredness and the self-justification has gone on for so long that the layers of denial are that much thicker is with sobriety time than in the beginning. Because in the beginning, sometimes both people are like, yeah, this stuff's gotten really bad. Like, you can't help but have to admit the stuff ain't working. So both parties are sometimes more willing in the beginning to do stuff. You know, that initial kick of motivation, of inspiration, when that's why it's called rock bottom, folks. That's why, because you're suddenly willing to do stuff that you ain't ever been willing to do before, because you finally can't function, because the reality, the evidence is all around you that this shit hasn't worked. So what do we do? Right? So if you got two parties that are willing, It's significant that if this is love and sobriety and you would like things to improve, that both parties have to be willing to do some work at that. How that works for each, for that relationship, is going to be completely unique to that relationship. They might attend different counselors. They might attend different recovery programs. You know, whatever it is, it might be different. But just keep in mind that both parties have a place in that relationship to be grounded in happiness. And sometimes it gets uncomfortable before it gets comfortable. Okay. Sometimes it has to get uncomfortable before it gets comfortable. In fact, I would argue, if you are uncomfortable right now and there's no forward action being taken, like there's no work being done, you're going to be uncomfortable for quite a while. The good news is, when you decide to take action and responsibility for your part in that relationship, the uncomfortableness is only temporary, because you're doing something about it. I'm going to go to a break. And when I return from this break, I'm going to tell a little bit about my story, about how the very first layer of that onion started to get unpeeled, some of the realizations I had to have in my first marriage in order to start to turn the tide and understand that I had a part in the dysfunction, and the things that I did about that. And then I just got a lot more in store for the rest of the show. So I will be back shortly. If you are looking for a relationship coach, if you're a couple looking to get some help, or you're an individual who would really like to explore this more and you're looking for a high performance coach or an emotional elevation coach, which is me, feel free to reach out to me on my website at susandene.com, or just email me or DM me off my Facebook page. I'd be more than happy to do a free strategy session with you to get something started for you. I'm super passionate about this. I don't believe we get sober to be miserable, and relationships are a key part of that. So join me back here just shortly after break.
Are you ready to branch out, to take a leap of faith, to love yourself and others fully? Join Erica Gifford Mills in her signature series, The Rooted Life. This virtual 12-week series will equip, empower, and enlighten you. This is a coaching series that allows both group and individual work. 12 weekly, 1-hour sessions in the comfort of your own home. Schedule your free Empower Hour now at GetRootedRadio.com. That is GetRootedRadio.com.
I am Chris Atkins, and I help women boss up, get fit, and become unstoppable. And I do this by helping them create healthy habits that support nutrition and exercise and mindset work and stress management and self-care. You get the idea. If that sounds something like you're interested in, you can find me everywhere. Just Google, you know, Chris Atkins 365 Daily Hustle. It's a global health coaching company, so I'm coaching women all over the world.
Are you ready to branch out, to take a leap of faith, to love yourself and others fully? Hi, I'm Erica Gifford Mills, founder of Balance Symmetry and host of Get Rooted Radio. If you answered yes to even one of the above, then this 12-week course is for you. The Rooted Life Group Coaching Series will give you the tools, techniques, and strength to be intentional in your pursuit of what sets your soul on fire. Find out more about this program on my website, GetRootedRadio.com.
Tune in to Maximum Resilience with me, Kelly Bazzani, your ally for addiction, the first Monday of each month at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Join us and engage in this epic journey of how to own your power and change your perception of addiction while we revolutionize the approach that ensures mental health as we address a worldwide epidemic. Take the steps that lead you towards an incredible life of maximum resilience. We do recover. Visit MyResilienceCoach.com.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Know You're Crazy show. My name is Susan Dene, and you are listening to Emotional Recovery in the Raw. Today's topic is love and sobriety. If you were here for the first segment of the show, I'm simply talking about the challenges that we can face in early sobriety and even long-term sobriety when it comes to relationships and love. For right now, I'm talking about couples, but later on in the show, I will also be hitting on parenting because parenting is another type of love in sobriety and in general. But I'm sticking to the sober folks today. The first part of the show, I was just simply sharing that when we get sober, we are a train wreck more or less. When we're waking up from that fog of illusion and delusion from drugs and alcohol, sometimes we look over and we look at the person we're with and we're like, oh my goodness, what happened? Or the relationship is in complete turmoil and we don't know how to be in the relationship. For others, it sometimes happens in later sobriety where we think we know some stuff or we've spent a long time single in sobriety and then we find ourselves in a relationship and we're wondering, how do I function in this? And who am I? And we sometimes get ahead of, we know too much in sobriety because we've done all this internal work. And so now we think we know some stuff. And then we get in a relationship and realize we don't know crap. We're kind of like vulnerable all over again. It can be a weird sensation. Me, I've lived both lives. I got sober in a relationship where we were both in early sobriety. That was my first marriage. And my second husband, we got together, I think when I was around 7 years clean. And now I'm 21 years clean and we're still together. And there's been a lot of lessons in that too. So today, the topics that I bring to you and the experience and strength that I bring to you is not only from my own story and things that I did, but also from the people that I've served over the years, different couples that I've coached over the years in sobriety. Specifically, I say sobriety because I don't know, that's just what I want to talk about right now. But what I'm sharing can be used in any type of relationship when it comes to intimacy, when it comes to love, when it comes to parenting. I simply use the sobriety as a rock bottom reminder that we don't get sober to be miserable. We get sober to be happy and fruitful. And when we find ourselves in relationships, you know, there's two things. You can have relationships rock your sobriety, or you can have a job rock your sobriety. And think of all the things that are in that category. sobriety. We're afraid we're going to lose something or we're not going to get something. We get threatened by jealousy, insecurity. Some of us fight control issues. We want to dominate our partner until we learn that that's not good. I mean, there's all kinds of things in the threatened category of an intimate relationship for some people in sobriety. Job can be no difference. I'm not going to get into the professional much too much, but you know, you think about professionally things that can be threatened. Finance, security in both of them, both romance and finance, jobs. But your security can get threatened. The ego takes a place in the professional world. Like there's different things in sobriety that we can really make bigger than what it needs to be. But the love and relationships in sobriety is what I'm really honing in on today. So early sobriety for me looked like both of us getting sober. We had a 1.5-year-old and we had a 10-year-old, my stepdaughter. We were both scraping together at new jobs. We had a house that we couldn't afford. I think we had borrowed the money. I mean, we, you know, when you wake up from rock bottom, things aren't exactly pretty. I found it interesting over the last year and a half with my coaching business taking off, the women who come to me, either they are recovered alcoholics, but several of them were in relationships where the partner had an alcohol or drug problem. And when they heard my story, they wanted to talk about that. And so the degree to which alcoholism and drug addiction affects people's life is pretty significant. It's everywhere. We sometimes don't realize how many lives are impacted by this, and it can cause a sense of hopelessness. And that's one of the reasons why I was so passionate to talk about this topic today. For me, in the very beginning, when you've got especially fresh recovery in the home, or someone is attempting to get sober and perhaps they're struggling with getting sober, the first tip that I gave in the first segment of the show was treat them as your friend. Would you be mad at your friend if they were trying to get sober, or would you support them and encourage them? Take the personal out of it. The disease of alcoholism and addiction can feel very personal. Can you take the personal out of it and see your partner as a friend so that you don't experience so much anger, frustration in the beginning? It's not going to always be easy because it can feel threatening and it can feel like taking it personal. But that was one of the first tips I gave. The other tip I gave in the first segment of the show was simply for both parties to take an approach at getting better mentally and emotionally when it comes to the relationship. When a relationship wreaks havoc of alcoholism and addiction, and it can be an early sobriety or later sobriety, I'm always including that later sobriety because those of you with years under your belt, you know how we can get. We can get all full of our head like we know what's going on and then become selfishness and self-centeredness and not even see our part. We can become absolutely in denial. But both parties, this is the tip, both parties need to have a willingness to do something about it. A marriage and a relationship cannot get better when only one person's doing the work. It might temporarily take steps forward. And then sometimes the other partner catches up. Like one takes the initiative and then the other one sees it and they start moving forward. That works. But if one moves forward and the other one's always back here, I kind of feel sorry for the person who's back here because the person who's doing the work, hopefully they don't wake up one day and say, this ain't working for me no more. Right. So in my opinion, and it comes from working with a lot of people and my own life experience, both parties, when they're working, have a real good chance of a successful, happy partnership. Maybe that's through marriage. Maybe it's not. But a successful, loving partnership moving forward when both parties are willing. And the other thing I mentioned in the first segment was humility, and that's going to bring me to what I'm going to talk about next. In my story, when I hit that point of willingness and vulnerability and understanding that when I woke up from my, when I started being sober in the early days, I realized there was a lot I didn't know. And part of what I didn't know was how to have communication or a marriage or even how to deal when I'd come in the door and the socks weren't picked up. You know, we trip over so many trivial things sometimes when we're learning. And I think this kind of happens maybe when we're younger in age. You know, this was 20 years ago for me, but I've seen it happen in later years, you know, where trivial things we make a priority. And for me, the humility came in the beginning was being willing to ask somebody how to do this. If you are in a relationship and sobriety is somewhere in there for one partner, both partners, maybe it's early, maybe it's late, the ability to remain humble and ask for guidance and help in this area can really be a game changer when it comes to the quality of the relationship. As I shared in the first segment, rock bottom has a tendency to push us into that humility because we have no choice. We have no choice. The evidence is all around us that what we've been doing ain't working. And so we become willing. And in my story, I remember calling my AA sponsor back then. And I said to her, it was something to do with my marriage. I can't remember the specifics, but I remember asking her what to do. And I remember the feeling that I honestly didn't know how to do this. And it was something as simple as, do I say something about the socks not being picked up in the living room or do I not? Because I could make a big mountain of the socks not being picked up in the living room. I could grow that thing into all kinds of stuff. You know what I mean? Oh, you don't understand me. You make me do all the work. It's controlling. It's lazy. It's personal. Can't you see how much work I do? Can't you see how much I worked all day long? You know, all the justified stuff. You see that? Just over a pair of socks on the floor. Now, that's just one example. But as an early sober individual, I didn't know how to not make a big deal about the socks. I didn't have the skill, and I will say skill set even, let's say relationship skill set. I didn't have a communication skill set. I did not have the communication skill set to understand that the socks were simply a trivial item in this marriage that was trying to recover. The socks ain't nothing. But what was behind the socks was the inability to ask for what I needed help with, to even ask for help. And so as we come into love and it being a decision and not a feeling, there's items like that that we will literally trip over and make a priority. So how do we remain sane? So that was your third tip right there. I don't know if you got that. But the third tip was to remain humble enough to ask for guidance, whoever that's going to be. For me back then, it was an AA sponsor. To this day, it's still an AA sponsor, but I've added to that circle. Now I have a therapist. Now I have friends in long-term sobriety that I ask guidance for. All of you with the online stuff, we got so many tools right now. We got too many tools, in my opinion, but there are so many resources for you right now. So if you're miserable in a relationship right now, and I'm focusing kind of on the sobriety one today, but there are so many resources and so many books that can be applied. But the strength of a human voice to bounce things off of, in my opinion, is much stronger than taking an online course on trying to be in a relationship. I don't know, just me. Combination works well. But to have that human connection with somebody who's been there and done that, that would be a tool that I would strongly advocate for you. Strongly advocate for you. So if you're just now joining the show, and I'm talking about sobriety and love, I'm talking about humility, the willingness for both partners to ask for help and for guidance. If you've got a relationship that's in strife right now, that it's in trouble right now, you already know it. I don't need to suggest it to you. You know what's going on. You know if you're happy in that relationship or you're not happy in that relationship. And both of you also know if both of you are doing the work or only one person, I highly advocate that both people take a journey into becoming more mindful of their part in that relationship because that's how together they're going to grow. What was the other one? I'm going to hold that thought because when I come back, I am going to touch base on a few of the things that I have learned and the women that I have coached have learned to do in the relationship in order to get it to the next level. So I'm going to go to break. And when I come back, more tools for you, in addition to what I've already talked about, and let's take this to the next level of what you can do to enhance your relationship in love and sobriety.
Have you lost sight of who you truly are? Thought leader Linda Lamp is here to help. She illuminates the divine within and walks you through the walls of illusion that hide the truth about your true nature. With her help, you can realize your true self, become a force for good, and create heaven on earth. The Internal Divinity Show, uplifting and illuminating the divine in your life. Second Tuesday of every month at 4 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
On the Spiritual Freedom Show, you will hear the voice of an extraterrestrial master speaking through my teacher, Dr. George King, as it was recorded over 60 years ago. I'm Richard Lawrence, and on this podcast, I bring you the nine freedoms, which I believe to be the greatest wisdom on earth, with practical ways to give global service and attain enlightenment.
What are you connected to? Or what are you disconnected from? Tune into The Connected Conversation with Brett Hill on TTRLive.com and learn how to avoid unnecessary suffering and activate your mind-body connection. Step into a life that works for you. Flourish and express our natural creativity and exuberance as you learn how to look deep within and find your natural allies and connect authentically with yourself, others, and the world. To learn more, visit TheConnectedConversation.com.
Everyone, welcome back to the Know Your Crazy Talk Show. My name is Susan Dene, and you are listening to Emotional Recovery in the Raw. Today's topic is love and sobriety, relationships. How do we really practice love? It's a decision, not a feeling. How do we do that into sobriety? In sobriety, how do we get sober and stay married and not break up right away? All these good tools and tips that I'm going to be given today. I've already given about, I think, four total tips for the first half of the show. So now I'm just going to keep moving on because I think one of the biggest things I learned in the relationship, the current one that I'm in, which actually I've been married twice in sobriety, and the first marriage really taught me about consideration, taught me about not being angry towards my partner for going through the same growing pains that I was going through. That also taught me about respect and having different standards in your relationship. If you are in sobriety, whether that's early sobriety or long-term sobriety, something that I talk about a lot, and I've done other shows on it, are deal breakers and really truly understanding what is respectful in a relationship for you and what is not. What is going to be acceptable behavior in a relationship and what is not. And the behaviors that as alcoholics and addicts that we can bring into a relationship can be obnoxious. I mean, selfish, self-centered to the core. We can become angry, we can be intimidating, or we can go the exact opposite of the spectrum and go complete doormat, not have a voice, not express what we need, and then be internally angry because the other person keeps being a jerk, right? Like there's these tendencies that we have because we run to extremes in sobriety, because we ran to extremes in our disease. You know what I'm talking about. It was all or nothing. And we will do the same type of behavior in a sober relationship that we did when we were using, only now the relationship can become the higher power that the drugs and the alcohol were. Because we are obsessive people. Like, we can be obsessive. And we can become illusioned and delusioned about what the other person is or isn't doing. Sometimes we become demanding. We want them at our beck and call. Why did you not answer my phone? Why did you not see that text? You know, all of a sudden, like, somebody is supposed to be behaving in a way with, you know, snap to is like, hello. So we have to watch those behaviors of ours. And we cannot allow the relationship to become our higher power. Do you know what I'm saying by that? Like, do not make it your all or nothing. You know, as sober individuals, we can be highly ambitious and we need to grow. As individuals, we need to grow. If in sobriety, especially if you've got two partners in sobriety, both individuals start to become somewhat addicted to growth, because when we get sober, we realize, like, wow, this feels pretty good to grow. This feels pretty good to push ourselves. This feels pretty good to mentally and emotionally start to understand myself better. And if we give that up just because we get in a relationship and now we make the relationship what we, you know, we think that that's going to be the fill in the whole thing. It's not. We have to be cognizant of not making the relationship our higher power while We try to work on the relationship to better it so that we can have an outstanding, loving, kind, compassionate experience with our partner. Okay? So I don't know what tip I'm on. Maybe number five, don't make the relationship your higher power. And still be willing to grow it, especially if you've hit a tough spot. Not all spots are going to be tough in the relationship, but learning how to communicate and to be a partner when you're coming from addiction and alcoholism and it being all about you, that's where I wanted to get to on this segment. This relationship, your partner, it's not about you. Here's a story. I'm with my ex-husband. Second husband. I'm in my second relationship. I don't think we were married yet, but this truly was the first relationship where I was learning how to communicate, learning how to effectively ask for what I need. And he was a great partner and is a great partner for me in that respect. We both have children. We have a blended family. There have been pros and cons to the blended family syndrome. If any of you are living it, I understand, because sometimes understanding the roles, the boundaries, is it okay if I say this? Is it not okay if I say this? I don't love the children the same as I would love my own children because they're not my own blood. Is that weird? Is that shameful? How do you feel about that? Like, there's all these things that go on in a blended family. We weren't together that long. For the first time in sobriety and in a functioning relationship, the first one was somewhat functioning, but this one I was really learning how to communicate. I would get jealous. And this is where I learned about jealousy and sobriety. And there was a mother of the children, fantastic woman, by the way. But back then I found her intimidating and I got jealous really easily. And there was a moment where I got jealous over something and I was arguing with him. And he kept saying to me, it's not about you. And what he was pertaining to was, it was a situation with the children. And what he was trying to convey to me was, it's not about you. It's about the kids. But I kept making it all about me. My fear, my uncomfortableness, what it was doing to me. It was probably something to do with communication between him and the mom and the boys. I don't know. That had to have been what it was. But I remember him like almost having to yell at me as I was sitting in my car on my phone with him, trying to pick a fight. You ever pick a fight? You ever try to pick a fight? You ever like, you feel insecure, you feel vulnerable, feel a little bit jealous, and now you're going to try taking it out on your partner? I have. That's why this show is called Know You're Crazy. I am really familiar with my crazy when it came to this stuff. And so he was literally having to yell at me to get through that thick-minded skull of mine that it wasn't about me. If you are struggling with your partner, if you have become super judgmental of your partner, if you have gone from loving and compassionate and considerate to judging, criticizing, and really in a bad spot with them, well, let me just tell you, it's not about you. Your partner has their own life to live. Your partner has their own experiences to have. I was touching lightly on the other segment before this one about deal breakers and about truly understanding what your deal breakers and what your values are, because I was touching on behaviors. And what we start to realize in relationships and recovery is the other person's behaviors, it's not about us. It's about them. What we get to do in a partnership, in a relationship, is communicate how somebody else's behaviors affect us. And we get to decide if those behaviors become too much for us, because now they're buttoned up against values that we have in sobriety that maybe we've never had before, right? And this might pertain more to people who have been sober for a long time, because in the beginning, it's a little bit overwhelming. We're kind of scrambling for all kinds of things. Maybe your values, you're not ready to really look at the values, because really at that point, it's just about staying sober. So it kind of falls more back into that, the friend, you know, love our friends, don't shoot them when they're trying to get well. And for the alcoholic addict, be careful with how your behaviors are, you know, really be reaching out and for some help on that. But for those of us who have had some time and we've been sober long enough to establish new values, and we've been sober long enough to build our self-esteem up, if those values start to get compromised because of our partner's behaviors, and big and here, by the way, and we've communicated to our partner how those behaviors are impacting us, and another and, we've made attempts at solving providing solutions for the relationship, if those values continue to be trampled on by somebody's obnoxious behaviors, at some point, a person in sobriety will run out of steam. So it's important to always kind of take a look at your deal breakers and how far and willing you are to go. I had a guy on one of my, this just popped in my head. I had a guy on one of my YouTube videos get really offended when I talked about deal breakers and really the belief behind breakup. He was offended at the fact that I pointed out that it's okay to break up. He said that does nothing for somebody who, that's more like a cop-out. Like it does nothing for really staying in it. I've been in the second relationship now for 14 or 15 years. I know exactly what it can feel like to stay through the bumps and stay in it. And I also know that when we got together, one of my deal breakers was, if you're in sobriety with me, you got to be willing to work this thing. And good for me, he had the same perspective. And so together we have an agreement. If you watch my show on, if you haven't watched my show on agreements, I highly suggest you watch that, because agreements are paramount in love and sobriety. Agreements about how you both are going to come together at the table and truly have agreements on what you're going to be willing to do when stuff gets tough. And this guy on the YouTube response was so offended that I said, breakups are okay. You know, if something's not working for you in love and sobriety, and you've taken all the necessary steps, that might end up being a route, but it will absolutely take you back to what your deal breakers are. So if you're wondering, how do I stay sober? How do I have love? Take a look at your values and take a look at yourself and what you're needing for those values in sobriety, because they may change. They may change. And the values that are established for you in sobriety will absolutely impact the relationship that you're in for both of you. And if you are a married couple in sobriety, at some point, taking a look at what the values are as a couple. My husband and I have a value of sincere communication, and we will have fantastic communication. We did not start out that way, but we started out talking, and sometimes it'd be one getting mad and one getting defensive, but we had an agreement, and sometimes it felt like fight or flight, like, I don't know if this thing's going to work. But we both had that initial agreement that we were both willing to work on it. And we both had people that we would reach out separately to grow. So remember what I said about both parties moving forward, not one getting left in the dust, right? One moves forward and one chooses not to. Our agreement was always that we're both in this thing to make it work. And as two recovered alcoholics, we both understood that we're not exactly coming with the best communication skills. I used to joke with him like, hey, dude, we met in AA. I mean... You know, we're going to have some bumps, man. When you come into the rooms with histories like we got, you're going to come in with some bumps. And so there has to be a sincere effort to make things work. And if you're in a relationship where one of you are in recovery, you know, sober recovery, and the other one didn't, you know, is not an addict or an alcoholic, trust me, you both got some baggage you're bringing to that party. If addiction and alcoholism has been running rampant in that relationship and now there's sobriety, you both got something going on there. I would love to say that maybe one's all that, but no. You both got some stuff going on. All right, so don't let me lose my train of thought. Oh, so the guy on YouTube. So the guy on YouTube had made those comments because I was getting into deal breakers and the permission to break up. Okay, so let me move on. So it's not about you when your partner's having problems. Remember, it's about them. And take some grace with the relationship. When you're in a sober relationship, time takes time. Time takes time. You know, the bumps that you experience, if the values are there and the agreements are there with both parties, you will get through the bumps and you will stay together through them and you won't have to break up and you'll establish brand new values together. And it'll be, but sometimes I remember calling one of my AA sponsors. We were doing some intensive work and it was around my first marriage. And we were sitting there, it's one of the 12 steps of AA. And you're more or less, it reminds you of, reminds me of my Catholic upbringing. I'm not Catholic anymore, but it reminds me of that. It's like kind of like confession in a way. That's the best way to put it. And I remember her asking me, what is your part, Susan? And she was trying to get to the bottom of what is your part in this marriage. And I couldn't answer the question. I couldn't see it. Remember what I talked about? You know, sometimes we have our blinders on. And I couldn't see it. And I was getting angry with her. She'd say, Susan, what is your part? What is your part? What is your part? I kept saying, I don't know what to tell you. I was coming up with all these other things. I was saying things like, well, I was judgmental. Well, I felt resentful, and she'd say, nope, that's not it. Nope, that's not it. Finally, she helped me out, finally threw me an olive branch. She said, you're not communicating. So this is a message for all the doormats out there, the ones who are overly tolerating behavior and not having a voice and not expressing how things make them feel because they're scared of something. Sometimes folks like that will say it does something with trauma, other, you know, trauma and drama. I don't mean to make light of trauma, but I do think it's overly sensitized, overly sensationalized in our society right now. I will go out on a limb and say that. I'm compassionate, I'm loving, and I understand it. But at the same time, it's not an excuse to stay sick. We have responsibilities as adults to do the work necessary to overcome our traumas. It's not to say that it won't come up for you, but at the same time, it's not an excuse to stay sick, and it's not an excuse to keep our relationship sick. I will say that. But she said to me, sometimes, Susan, it has to get messy before it gets better. Because what I was unwilling to do in that first relationship was I was unwilling to communicate how things were making me feel. I think we've done a disservice in recovery sometimes about overly taking our own inventory and not being willing to admit how somebody else's behavior affects us. We have often heard, what is your part? What is your part? Don't take somebody else's inventory. If you're someone in the rooms of recovery, this will sound familiar to you. I think we've almost done a disservice to, in a certain extent on that, because how we are impacted by somebody else's behavior absolutely needs to be communicated in a relationship, because one, we also learn that we don't crawl before anybody. And so there is an obligation and a responsibility to have a voice in a relationship. Because if I'm not having a voice in my relationship, my partner is not authentically being able to experience my highest self. What they are experiencing is a scared little rabbit who's being scared of not telling them how things really make them feel. And it's not fair to them either. Your motives or your intentions might be heartfelt, maybe. You know, maybe you're just, you know, like I said, that the trauma thing might be in there. And you have a responsibility to fix that, to really get to the root of that so that your relationship isn't hindered by it. But other things may come up that maybe you think you're being nice, or maybe you don't want to hurt their feelings. And every time we hesitate and every time we refuse to express who we are, or how another person's behavior impacts us, we absolutely withhold valuable information to the other person. The mistake that I personally made in my first marriage was I did not give him an opportunity to change because I held my voice for too long. And what I learned in that process was things have to get messy before they get better. You have to be willing to go out on a limb with your partner to communicate about what's not working. And sometimes the partner has to be willing to shut up long enough to listen to that when they feel defensive and that they want to, you know, say something in return. You know, I could do all kinds of therapeutic work on this show, and I could tell you, you know, the soft, cuddly stuff. But when you're in the throes of passion in an argument with your partner, or if you're in a silent role in your relationship and not really saying how somebody's behavior impacts you, that stuff kind of impacts you. Over time, it's like an insidious infection that just continues to roll inside of you. And as your relationship continues to deteriorate because you haven't been able to find a way to communicate, or you haven't found a way to not communicate, right? Things go south, and then you wonder why you're unhappy in the relationship. Yeah, I'm poking hard today, guys. I just really am. So for me, I had to learn to have a voice. I had to learn that when my partner's behaviors were impacting me, that I had to communicate that. And trust me, I love my second husband. He's going to chuckle when he hears this. But he wasn't always the best at receiving that feedback. He was doing the best he could too, but he wasn't always soft and cuddly and compassionate with what I was telling him. Sometimes he was arguing it, you know, sometimes. And so then I would feel like, oh my goodness. So this is what I get for communicating. I communicate, I'm authentic, and then I get trampled on because that's what it felt like. And so here's another tip. Allow your partner to have their experience. Allow your partner to have their experience with you. It kind of touches on that grace within the relationship. When you communicate a certain thing and your partner has a challenge with that, just give them the grace and the space to have that. Not everything's going to get fixed right away. But the main thing is that both people can come together and learn how to get over the hurdles and the bumps within the relationship. And why did I do the show on sobriety and love? Why did I do the show on sobriety and love? Because in sobriety, we can feel so threatened at times, and we can make relationships such a higher power that there's always a threat that if we get too heartbroken and we slip into too much self-pity, or we live in too much denial of our authentic self, all this stuff, right? All the good reasons we got sober because we just couldn't handle it anymore. If we allow a relationship to take our individual happiness away from us, what do you think is going to happen to someone like us? We're going to drink and use. That's all there is to it, right? How many people have gone out because they've been butthurt over a bad relationship, gone back out drinking, gone back out using drugs? You know, how many people feel overwhelmed because they don't know how to function in relationships? Either they've made them their higher power, or they've become the doormat in the relationship. And the depression and the anxiety and the frustration and the inability to communicate and the refusal to do anything about it. Eventually, you know what happens? A drink and a drug sound like a damn good idea. That's why this show is on love and sobriety today, because learning how to effectively love and be in sobriety with a partner is part of the growing in sobriety for us. And that growth doesn't stop just because you get 30, 60 days of sobriety. I'm going to go out on a tangent right now. How much time I got left in this show? Okay. I'm going to go out on a tangent right now because I got to tell you, being a sober woman of 21 years clean and sober and working with women one-on-one and watching them pick themselves up from rock bottom alcoholism, from jails, institutions, treatment centers, going to meetings, learning how to stay sober, facing humility, learning how to communicate, you know, facing their demons, watching their kids get sober, putting marriages back together, sometimes having to end marriages, burying children in sobriety. When I see somebody on Instagram touting their hot body because suddenly they're beer free, oh my goodness, does that get under my skin? Oh, because I got to tell you, for a real drug addict and a real alcoholic, I mean, this sounds crazy, but I'm going to claim my career in alcoholism and my career in drug addiction. When I see that near beer, I put beer down, hey, I feel great crap. I got to tell you, it crawls up my spine with frustration. I'm glad you're beautiful. I'm glad you're like 20 or 30 years old and that your body's hot and sexy. And now you don't drink. Yeah, I really am glad for you because I think the world's probably better without alcohol in all of our bodies. But at the end of the day, this is about emotional recovery. This is about learning how to have satisfying, functioning relationships. It's not about going to the gym when you get sober. It's about learning how to love authentically and how to give back this gift that's been given to us. So I had to go on that tangent because I got to tell you, sober stuff is everywhere. But what I don't hear a lot of is what people are doing to save their mind so they don't go back out and relapse. I mean, do we realize what the fentanyl problem is right now? Do we realize the opioid addiction? I just talked to a guy in Tennessee today who was talking about it's everywhere in his neighborhood, the opioid addiction, right? It's everywhere. So that's why I talk about love and sobriety, because this exact topic, unfortunately, has the power to take some of us back out drinking and using. And that's the last thing we get sober for. We don't get sober to be miserable. We get sober to put our lives together. And we can become dumbfounded, in denial, and miserable with years of recovery under our belt. We can do it with years of recovery because now we know some stuff. Right? And yet we come home and we'll terrorize the relationships in our life with our selfishness and our self-centeredness. We will become obstinate. We will become controlling. We will have these character flaws float to the surface, but we will justify the hell out of our behavior. Yeah, that's what we do. So some of you, that might be a little bit too harsh of a message for you today, but when I say that being on the front line with people who are getting sober and who have reestablished their lives, this stuff takes work. It takes work. If you want a happy and flowing and successful relationship in your life in sobriety, you have got to be willing to learn how to communicate, and you have got to be willing to learn how not to communicate at times, but you got to be willing to put the work into the relationship because it doesn't just land in your lap, folks. It doesn't just land in your lap. I will tell you, one of the best experiences I've had in my life is having a fantastic marriage with my husband. And it took work. It took work. It took a lot of communication. It took a lot of both of us getting angry at times. But there were agreements. There were deal breakers. There were things that we both, you know, understood about one another. And we each have our limits, right? And so in the relationship of love and sobriety, Have you established your limits with one another? Do you have your agreements? Do you know what your values are? If you are a couple, I'm just going to rehash a little bit here because the show's getting ready to wrap up. If you are a couple in early sobriety, I highly encourage you to get some outside help, because what you are under is not a delusion. It is stressful. It can feel powerless. It can feel overwhelming. You can wonder, you can have fight or flight day in and night. Day in and night, you're wondering if you should stay or go. Day in and night, you're fantasizing about getting your own house. I'm telling you, your own apartment. That can happen. So reach out and get some assistance to folks who have been there. Okay. Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon are great problem or great problems, great solutions if finances are really maxed. And I would say that even if they're not maxed, but those are free programs more or less that you can get help in. Therapy, recovery, treatment center. I mean, there are a lot of resources out there for you to start to build this relationship. Your life doesn't have to tear apart. Your relationship doesn't have to end, but it will require work, folks. It will require work. All right. So hopefully, if you watch the show tonight, you've got something out of that. Lots of tools included in the show tonight as far as if you're in love and you're in sobriety and you're looking to really stay connected and how do I communicate and what are some basic things between staying a friend, staying humble, asking for help, understanding it's not about you when your partner struggles, understanding that this is more about, you know, you just don't get sober and get to go work out and look hot and pretty. This stuff takes work. This stuff takes work. Recovery takes work. Don't fool yourself. But at the end of that work, are amazing lives worth living, satisfaction, true love, happiness, and appreciation for the person that you're with. We do learn how to love and appreciate in sobriety. All right. If you are looking for a coach or somebody to talk to or a couple coach, feel free to reach out to me on my website at susandene.com. You can also DM me on Facebook. It's an easy way to get a hold of me. Other than that, folks, I hope you have a fantastic evening. It's been a pleasure coming to you, talking today about love and sobriety. Take care and have a great evening. Bye.
You have been listening to Know You're Crazy.
Crazy. Crazy.
And my name is Susan Dene. We are identifying, understanding, and treating your crazy one episode at a time. Tune in to TransformationTalkRadio.com. To connect with me or Growth Spurt Your Life, please visit SusanDene.com. That's Susan Dene, DENEE.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.